The South Downs, England, June the 23rd, 1593. A landscape of green meadows and woodland, with the South Downs rising at its southern edge. Cut into the chalk-covered turf on the hill face is the ancient white outline of the Long Man of Wilmington, guarding the route to the sea beyond.
Father, how long until we get to an inn? My legs are tired of walking.
I never said we were going to an inn, Hamnet.
Following a path in the turf, trodden to mud, is a procession of four rough wooden carts, three drawn by huge shire horses, one by oxen. One of the carts is piled with theatrical costumes. One is stacked with properties, mock swords and spears and such, small bits of scenery and some rolled-up backdrops. The other two have people sitting in them. More are walking, leading the horses and oxen. These are the touring players of Lord Strange's Men, a company for which the actor, Master William Shakespeare, writes plays. The troupe is composed of about 20 people, and everyone, including the cook and the stage manager, take their part on the stage. In the rear cart are the young boy actors. At the front of the troupe, Will and his son Hamnet, aged 8, are walking beside the leading horse.
But Father, you said that we would be performing the new play tonight. Where shall we play it, if not in an inn?
I have no idea, but we will know soon. Keep your eyes on the road ahead, lad.
But Father...
Hush, lad!
William Shakespeare is 29. His hairline may be receding rapidly, but his star is rising, although he is not the success that he will be. He's come a long way from the days when he sat in a London tavern trying to impress the playwright who is now his only rival, Kit Marlowe. And in doing so, met Morpheus, the Lord of Dreams, with whom he made a pact.
Will, a moment of your time.
Yes, Kemp.
I have an idea. How would it be if I were eating a pork pie in the first scene? And then I could sit on it during Bob Armin's speech.
I think not.
But it would make them laugh.
It would also make them laugh if you broke wind loudly, Kemp.
But...
Please, just the lines and the jests I have writ for you. We perform tonight.
As you wish, of course.
This is the story of the first play that the Lord of Dreams called in from William Shakespeare and of its premiere performance before a very special audience on the Sussex Downs in 1593.
The Sandman. Midsummer Night's Dream.
Father! I can see a man on the way there! Look!
Indeed.
Will he be our audience?
I fear so, lad.
Hold fast! We stop here, my friends.
Nose bags for the horses, if you please.
Loose the oxen. There's good pasture here.
Hamnet, go and wait with Condell and the other boys.
But Father...
I must talk with this fellow. Go.
Standing on the brow of the hill, looking down at Shakespeare, is a tall figure dressed in an aristocratic doublet, hose and thigh boots. All black. His arms are folded. His cloak blows out. The expression on his pale face is unsmiling, though not unfriendly.
You have come, then, Will Shakespeare. It is all ready?
I wrote it as you told me, Lord. It is the best that I have written to this date.
I am sure it is. Walk with me.
So, we are here on your command, my lord, on Midsummer's Eve, by the Long Man of Wilmington. An odd choice of a place for us to perform.
Will?
Odd? Wendell's Mound was a theatre before your race came to this island.
Before the Normans?
Before the humans.
Will, what is happening? Who is this man?
This is the gentleman I told you of, Richard. It was he who commissioned the new play.
Ah. I am Richard Burbage, the leading man of Lord Strange's men and head of our company. And you are?
I am your patron for this play. You must act well tonight, Richard Burbage.
Sir, I never give of a performance that is less than my best. Although this barbarous farrago of fairy tale hodgepodge is a mere crowd pleaser at best. Tragedy is my forte. I've told Will to make me a lover most tragical, and when we return to London, I will make them weep true tears.
I have no doubts of your ability, Master Burbage.
I see you understand the theatre, Messiah. Lead us to your hall, then, and we shall perform our comedy for your enjoyment.
I have no hall. Not one that I will take you to.
Ah.
They have stopped at the site of the old flint mine, to the right of the figure of the giant. It forms a natural amphitheatre of a sort.
Here, Richard Burbage, on the Downs of Sussex, this will be your stage.
But we will play it on the greensward, Richard, just as we have rehearsed it in the fields and glades. This is a natural stage, and the evening is warm, and the light will last us.
What?
We owe... I owe much to this man.
Very well. Bestir yourselves there, lumpkins, and into your costumes. We perform the play here, on this green within the hour.
With practiced coordination, the rolls of scenery are swung off the wagons, braced on stretchers, and pegged down into the soft turf. Properties and costumes are distributed to the company. At the rearmost wagon, the younger actors pull on dresses and other finery. In this era, boys play the female parts, and among them, young Nash prepares himself as Helena, and the lad Condell will portray the Queen of Faery, Titania.
I can't wait until we're back in the smoke. I loathe these provincial tours.
As soon as the plague season is over, we'll be back at the Curtain and the Cross Keys. And you can make up to all your admirers again, Your Grace.
Cow? At least I have admirers.
Young Hamnet, already costumed as the little Indian boy, sits up on the wagon and watches them bicker.
My father says it's not the plague that's the problem. It's the city alderman.
Yes, do me up in the back, Hamnet. There's a love.
Yes, sir.
Did your father say who that stranger is? Or who we'll be performing for?
No.
How do I look?
You look very pretty.
Oh, thank you, Hamnet. For that, you shall have a strawberry.
Thank you.
Who has moved the ass's head?
Where's the lantern? And the sticks?
My beard! By the Lord Jesus, ye art wearing my beard!
The king doth keep his revels here tonight. Mark not of faith. Take
the carts, with oxen removed and put to pasture, having been dragged into a half circle in the lee of the hill, and the various backcloths now hung upon them, form the playing area for the piece. As the company make final their preparations, Master Shakespeare, costumed to play Theseus the king, finds the Lord of Dreams a little distance away.
Sire, all is prepared, and we poor players but await our cues. Audience on their way?
They wait on the other side of the hill, needing only the unclosing of a portal to make their way to us. I will call them. Go tell your fellow players to make ready to begin.
Right readily.
Morpheus, the ruby around his neck glinting in the evening sun, walks to the feet of the great chalk outline of the giant, its arms outstretched to vertical channels cut into the chalk, like the perpendicular uprights of a doorframe. He addresses it.
Wendell! Open your door!
And now a most curious sight ensues, one which Will Shakespeare and his players are too preoccupied, or already too enchanted, to notice. The chalk carving of the Long Man of Wilmington, moves on its bed of turf, its left hand sweeping across to grasp the right-hand side of the door frame. The giant now draws back the line with both hands, and a light spills out. It is the light of the Land of Faerie. A procession emerges from the beautiful land, which can be glimpsed through the door. Ifrits and boggarts, dwerges and kobolds, goblins, white ladies, kelpies and ogres, pixies and peeries and nixies and trolls and elven folk, all of them, the fae. At the front of the procession are their king and queen, Oberon and Titania. Titania is dressed in a shift and overgown which would not look out of place in Elizabeth's court. Oberon wears an ornate suit of armor. Their subjects are clad in flowers and leaves and grass and spiderwebs and rainbows. Morpheus extends a welcoming hand to them, bowing the while. Their huge golden eyes stare at him with curiosity.
Welcome to you, Oberon of Domdaniel, and to you also, Lady Titania.
Greetings, Shaper.
Your invitation has provoked much speculation amongst our people. I must confess, we thought we were quit of this plane forever.
Is anything forever, Your Grace?
Puck, sharp-smiling, untamed, monkey-like, scampers out to squat at Oberon's feet.
They say the seven endless are forever, mighty dream. You and the other six, until the death of time itself. What say you to that, King of the Riddle Realms?
I keep my own counsel, Master Puck.
He rests with his legs akimbo and his arms hanging between them, while the king absent-mindedly scratches the tuft of fur that grows on the top of his head.
Robin Goodfellow, mind your manners. We are my Lord Shaper's guests, and I will not have him insulted by a hobgoblin.
Nay, good Oberon. It is a fool's prerogative to utter truths that no one else will speak. Please, take your seats. The diversion I have arranged begins forthwith.
Thrones for my master and mistress! Make haste!
Father, they are all assembled.
Very well. Company, gather! My fellow players.
Have you seen the audience?
No.
They are garbed more extravagantly than ever we have been.
Hush now. Give forth, Will.
Let this, our first performance, be our best, my friends. Will Kemp, no business we have not rehearsed.
My word upon it.
Henry Condell, remember that you play a queen, not a strumpet.
Ooh, the very thought.
Hippolyta, Philostrate, places. And break a leg.
The audience of fairy folk have arranged themselves in ranks of increasing strangeness, seated on the grass as it rises above and around the playing area. At the front, placed under a hastily constructed bower, are thrones for Oberon and Titania, and a chair for the Lord of Dreams.
What signifies this fanfare, Morpheus?
The revels commence, my lady.
Will Shakespeare, clad as Theseus, walks into the playing area, following the boys playing Hippolyta and Philostrate.
By the Lord Harry.
Will would be sweating and biting his lip for any first performance of his work, but now he is face to face with an audience no actor could ever expect to play to, and he freezes.
Odd's blood.
Morpheus rests his forehead in his hand.
What was I thinking? To place my trust in mortals? This cannot work.
I do not understand, Morpheus. Is this but a dumb show?
Line!
Now, fair Hippolyta.
Now, fair Hippolyta, our nuptial hour draws on apace. Four happy days bring in another moon. But oh, methinks how slow this old moon wanes.
The play is underway, and Morpheus allows himself a moment's relief. Oberon and Titania are listening and smiling.
It is well spoken, sir. Your mortal author fashions well.
I thank you, lady, and I, too, am gratified.
While the King and Queen of Faerie enjoy the diversion provided by the human players, in the upper reaches of the grassy bank, others are not so convinced.
What's this? What means this prancing, chattering mortal flesh?
A creature with the body of a woman and the head of a goat, perched on the shoulder of Bevis, the giant, is less than impressed.
Oh, methinks perhaps the Dream Lord brought us here to feed.
Nah, it's a what's name? You know, thingy, a play, they're pretending things. That one up there, Lysander, he loves her, Hermia. But her dad wants her to marry the other one, Demetrius, see?
The more I hate, the more he follows me.
The more I love, the more he hateth me.
Not really. These are mortal mating rituals.
Something like that, Scarrow. But it's a love story, not dinner.
The play proceeds smoothly after its shaky start.
Our play is the most lamentable comedy and most cruel death of Pyramus and Thisbe.
A very good piece of work, I assure you, and merry. Now, good Peter Quince, call forth your actors by the scroll. Master, spread yourselves.
Answer as I call you. Nick Bottom, the Weaver.
Ready? Name what part I am for, and proceed.
You, Nick Bottom, are set down for Pyramus.
What is Pyramus?
But, Master Will, they're not human. I saw boggarts and trolls and nixies and things of every manner and kind.
Aye, and they are also our audience, Tommy. Calm yourself. There are worse than fairy folk out there.
Worse?
Aye. Kemp, who has carried that wretched pie into this scene, which I forbade him to. If he sit on it, I'll leave him here on the morrow.
Or a part to tear a cat in.
Francis Flute, the bellows mender.
Here, Peter Quince.
Oh, how I do ache to make a sport of them.
No, Puck. Do you behave, my servant?
You are my king. Your whim is my command. Ho, ho, ho.
Let me not play a woman. I've a beard colour.
Why, Lord of Dreams, I do believe that you actually smiled.
I see you take pleasure in these revels, Your Grace.
Let me play the lion too. I will roar that it will do any man's heart good to hear me. I will roar that I will make the Duke say, let him roar again. Let him roar again.
The amusement among many of the fairy folk is even greater when they see themselves depicted by the players.
Right, called Robin Goodfellow.
Are you not he that frights the maidens?
It's you, Puck.
I am that merry wanderer of the night.
Hobgoblin, that actor personates you.
I had forgotten me, these centuries in fairy, what rare creatures mortals could be. What rare fun.
Though not all were pleased with the portrayal.
I am that merry wanderer of the night. I am that giggling, dangerous, totally bloody psychotic menace to life and limb, more like it.
Shush, Peach Blossom. The Puck might hear you.
Tail, sometime for 3 foot stool, mistaken.
It seems to me that I heard this tale sung once in old Greece by a boy with a lyre.
Indeed, my lady.
You are a deep one, Morpheus. I would I could fathom your motives.
Later, lady. Watch the play, for here are you and your consort portrayed.
Here comes Oberon.
And here my mistress. Would that he were gone.
Ill met by moonlight, proud Titania.
What, jealous Oberon? Fairy, skip hence.
Would I dress in a shift like that? I should be surprised to be called queen.
Am I not thy lord?
And a surprise for me when first we lay together, were you also a boy?
But she, being mortal of that boy, did die. And for her sake do I rear up her boy. And for her sake I will not part with him.
That child, Morpheus, the one playing the Indian boy, who is he?
He is the son of Will Shakespeare, the author of this play.
A beautiful child. Most pleasant. Will I meet him?
I have told Shakespeare to call an interval halfway through the play. And you will meet him then.
Ah, 'tis uncommon for you to have such waking commerce with mortal kind.
We came to an arrangement 4 years back. I have given him what he thinks he most desires, and in return he'd write 2 plays for me. This is the first of them.
I understand. So, we have 4 lovers heading for the wood. We have clowns who would be actors, and actors portraying me and my royal consort. In the old tale, there was a love potion that left the goddess rutting with an ass.
The next thing then she, waking, looks upon, be it on lion, bear, or wolf, or bull, on meddling monkey, or on busy ape, she shall pursue it with the soul of love.
Ah, yes, the love potion.
Stay, though thou kill me, sweet Demetrius.
I charge thee hence, and do not haunt me thus.
Oh, wilt thou darkling leave me? Do not go.
Stay on thy peril, I alone will go.
Hang on. So there's this love potion, and he's going to make Her Majesty love something nasty. But where do the young mortals come into it?
Don't you ever listen, Peach Blossom. He's put the potion on what's name? Lysander, right? Now he's going to fall in love with her, the skinny one.
Huh?
Oh, you see, the pup thought that he was the other one. So when...
Can't you two be quiet? Some of us are trying to listen.
Not Hermia, but Helena I love. Who would not change a raven for a dove?
Play goes well, Will. However, it seems to me that we are performing for simple applause. And even we glorious vagabonds must eat.
We shall have an interval at the end of Kemp and Condell's first scene. We can talk of silver then. Reason becomes
the marshal. You must be very proud of your father, Hamlet.
Proud, I suppose. He's very distant to me. He doesn't seem like he's really here anymore. Not really. It's like he's somewhere else. Anything that happens, he just makes stories out of it. I'm less real to him than any of the characters in his plays.
Oh?
Mother says he's changed in the last 5 years, but I don't remember him any other way. Judith, she's my twin sister. She once joked that if I died, he'd just write a play about it. Hamlet.
Give me that ass's head, laddie. I am back on in a moment.
Here.
Good boy.
Mother ordered him to have me for this summer. It's the first time I've seen him for more than a week at a time that I remember. But we live 5 days' ride from London up in Warwickshire and see him seldom. All that matters to him, all that matters is the stories.
I would be proud of him if he were my father.
Follow you. I'll lead you about, around, through bush, through brake, through briar. Sometimes a horse I'll be, sometime a hound, a hog, a headless bear, sometime a fire, and neigh, and bark, and grunt, and roar, and burn, like horse, hound, hog, bear, fire, at every turn.
Why do they run away? This is a knavery of them to make me afeard.
Oh, Bottom, thou art changed. What do I see on thee?
This is magnificent! And it is true!
I never fell in love with an ass, Hobgoblin.
It never happened, yet it is still true. What magic art is this?
Our friend the Lord of Dreams has both hands in... Is that not so, Morpheus?
I merely requested the piece in return for a boon, Your Grace.
What angel wakes me from my flowery bed?
All right. What's so funny about having a donkey's head, eh?
Shush now.
Go on, tell me what's so funny.
Oh, pipe down, goat face. Mark,
and dares not answer nay.
I love thee.
Methinks, mistress, you should have little reason for that. And yet, to say the truth, reason and love keep little company together nowadays.
Besides, if you ask me, none of these women are women at all. They're males. I can tell. Human males taste more like rabbit than the females. And they stick in your teeth. Oh, yes.
Peas blossom, cobweb, moth, and mustard seed.
Ready?
Did he say peas blossom? That's my name. What did he say?
Also, the males are hairier, and they lack the flesh on their chests.
Will you shut up? I can't hear a thing with you rabbit it on like that all the time.
Gentles, there will now be an interval for you to freshen or to stretch your legs. Our tale begins again 10 minutes hence. Good work there,
Kemp. You see, you need no antics with a pie to garner laughter.
Aye, master. Though the ass's head helps.
You are the author of this amusement?
Yes. Your Grace.
It strikes strange music, sir. Methinks I should be displeased, yet I am not. It is fine work. It is most worthy work.
Thank you, Your Grace. May I introduce you to Mr. Burbage, who plays your part? Richard! Over here!
A moment, Will, I'm pissing!
And, those things do best please me that befall preposterously.
Why, sir, you startled me.
Ha ha! Puck meets puck. Is that not preposterous? And what's this I spy? Your lines? No! Oh, I do see sport here.
My Lord Oberon, I am the, leader of these Lord Stranger's men, and though it is a joy for us to perform, we also need to pay our way through the countryside.
You talk of gold?
Yes.
Gold? You ask Oberon of the Fae for gold? Then you must have your gold, actor.
I thank you, Lord. This will be more than sufficient.
No, no! I'm the one who plays puck!
You played me well, mortal, but I have played me for time out of mind, and I do Robin Goodfellow better than anyone!
They are well pleased, as am I, Master Shakespeare. It is finely crafted, and it will last.
You are satisfied?
I am.
If you are satisfied, then our bargain is half concluded.
Indeed.
One other play, then? Celebrating Dreams? At the end of my career?
That is the compact.
Yes. The Dream is the best thing I have written, and it plays well. Not even Kit Marlowe will be able to gainsay that.
You have not heard?
Heard?
Marlowe is dead, Will. He died in Deptford 3 weeks back of a knife wound to the head.
Who killed him? Ingram Fraser, I'll be bound. Cecil's man.
Yes.
Oh, Kit, I told you not to play with politics. Why did you tell this to me now? This news could have waited. Marlowe was my friend.
I did not realize it would hurt you, sir.
You did not realize? No, your kind care not for human lives. Dark stranger, I already half regret our bargain. But come, our night's comedy begins once more. Who has the flash powder and tinderbox for the moment of restoration?
Any food I wish?
Yes, sweet Hamnet. And bonny dragons that will come when you do call them, and fly you through the honeyed amber skies. There is no night in my land, pretty boy, and it is forever summer's twilight.
Oh, I would dearly love to visit this place of which you speak.
My lady, the play will start anon.
Thank you, Dream Lord.
How now, mad spirit? What knight rule now about this haunted grove?
My mistress with a monster is in love!
This must be our last visit to this earth, Shaper. Things have changed, and will change more. And Gaia no longer welcomes us as once she did.
I know, and I regret it much.
But you will always be welcome in our land, Dreamlord. The gates to Faerie are never fully closed. Come when you wish.
Perhaps. Perhaps one day I will.
Dick Cowley acts well tonight. I have never seen him feign a finer perk. He seems almost two-thirds hobgoblin.
Father?
Not now, child. I must see this.
She was such a pretty lady, Father. And she said such things to me.
Lord, what fools these mortals be!
Come, sit thee down upon this flowery bed, while I thy amiable cheeks do coy, and stick musk roses in thy sleek, smooth head, and kiss thy fair, large ears, my gentle joy.
Where's Peas Blossom?
Ready.
Scratch my head, Peas Blossom.
Did you hear that? Peas Blossom? That's meant to be me, that is. It's nothing like me. Nothing!
It isn't you, Peas Blossom. Now be quiet.
Yeah, you shut your face, Peas.
Is it what's her name? Travelogue. No. Travesty, that's it. I'm the only Peas Blossom among the Fae. Scratch his head. Oh, give him scratches, bleeding head.
Peas Blossom. Like I said, I'm not having you spoiling it for everyone.
And now I have the boy, I will undo this hateful imperfection of her eyes. And gentle Puck, take this transformed scalp from off the head of this Athenian swain.
I have had a most rare vision.
I wonder, Titania, I wonder if I have done right. And I wonder why I wonder. Will is a willing vehicle for the great stories. Through him they will live for an age of man, and his words will echo down through time. It is what he wanted, but he did not understand the price. Mortals never do. No, they only see the prize, their heart's desire, their dream. But the price of getting what you want is getting what once you wanted. And had I told him, had he understood, what then? It would have made no difference. Have I done right, Titania? Have I done right?
Oh, it is a wonderful play, Lord Shaper. Most enchanting and fine.
The eye of man hath not heard. The ear of man hath not seen. Man's hand is not able to taste, his tongue to conceive, nor his heart to report what my dream was.
'Tis strange, by Theseus, that these lovers speak of.
More strange than true. I never may believe these antique fables nor these fairy toys. Lovers and madmen have such seething brains. The lunatic, the lover, and the poet are of imagination all compact. One sees more devils than vast hell can hold. That is the madman. The lover, all as frantic, sees Helen's beauty in a brow of Egypt. The poet's eye, in a fine frenzy, rolling, doth glance from heaven to earth, from earth to heaven, and, as imagination bodies forth the forms of things unknown, the poet's pen turns them to shapes and gives to airy nothing a local habitation and a name. The riot of the tipsy bacchanals tearing the Thracian singer in their rage, that is an old device, and it was played when I from Thebes came last a conqueror.
I see a voice. Now will I to the chink.
You have asked me why I asked you back to this worldly plane. To see this entertainment, I... During your stay on this earth, the fairy have afforded me much diversion and entertainment. Now you have left for your own haunts, and I will repay you all for the amusement. And more, they shall not forget you. That was important to me. That King Oberon and Queen Titania will be remembered by mortals until this age is gone.
We thank you, Shaper, but this diversion, although pleasant, is not true. Things never happen thus.
Oh, but it is true. Things need not have happened to be true. Tales and dreams are the shadow truths that will endure when mere facts are dust and ashes and forgot.
If you say so, Dream Lord, we are honored.
This is the silliest stuff that ever I heard.
The best in this kind are but shadows, and the worst are no worse if imagination amend them. The iron tongue of midnight hath told 12. Lovers to bed. 'Tis almost fairy time. I fear we shall outsleep the coming morn.
We fairies that do run by the Triple Hecate's team, following
dark... A moment, but where... Oh.
What is it, husband?
A subterfuge. That is Puck himself, upon the player's stage, wearing the mask the actor wore. Come, my Puck, and leave this foolishness, for now the time for our return draws near. Already, Wendell opens up his gate.
Ah, what? Leave, my lord, when there are mortals to confusticate and vex?
That is not Cowley.
Go, you all. Your Puck will stay, the last hobgoblin in a dreary world.
Beyond the rising slope of grass, the great chalk figure has begun once more to close his gate. The crowd of fairy folk rise as if one and return to their land.
What's happening? Where are they going? What's happening?
Goodbye, king and queen. Farewell, fair folk. Go in peace.
Only one figure is left upon the playing area that has been used as a stage.
If we shadows have offended, think but this, and all is mended. That you have but slumbered here while these visions did appear. And this weak and idle theme, no more yielding than a dream. Gentles, do not reprehend. If you pardon, we will mend. And, as I am an honest Puck, if we have unearned luck now to scape the serpent's tongue, we will make amends ere long. Else the Puck a liar call. So, good night unto you all. Give me your hands, if we be friends, and Robin shall restore amends.
And now it is morning, and the entire company, including Will Shakespeare himself, find they have slept where they last remember themselves to have stood.
Oh, fish.
Was it a dream then, Richard?
A dream, Will? No. For see, a pouch of gold.
Gold? Richard, this is a pouch of yellow leaves.
But we were cheated.
No, for we were paid full well. Which other troupe has played to such an audience?
Father, I had such a strange dream. There was a great lady who wanted me to go with her to a distant land.
Oh, foolish fancies, boy. Now, on the cart today, you must practice your handwriting. Perhaps you could write a letter to your mother. Or to Judith.
Oh!
Come on, you vagabonds, stir yourselves. We can be in Lewis by late afternoon, and there's an inn I know will be glad of a troupe of actors with a new comedy to show.
Hamlet Shakespeare died in 1596, aged 11. Robin Goodfellow's present whereabouts are unknown.
Listening to The Sandman, an Audible original produced in association with DC, from the DC Publications, written by Neil Gaiman, dramatized and directed for audio by Dirk Maggs, based on characters created by Neil Gaiman, Sam Keith, and Mike Dringenberg, narrated by Neil Gaiman, starring, in alphabetical order, Riz Ahmed as the Corinthian, Justin Vivian Bond as Desire, Arthur Darville as William Shakespeare, Kat Dennings as Death, Taron Egerton as John Constantine, William Hope as Dr. John Dee, Matthew Horn as Hop Gadling, Reginald D. Hunter as Ja'an Ja'ans, Sue Johnston as Unity Kincaid, Patterson Joseph as the Demon Corazon, Josie Lawrence as Mad Hedy, Anton Lesser as Dr. John Hathaway, Joanna Lumley as Lady Joanna Constantine, Miriam Margulies as Despair, James McAvoy as Morpheus, Samantha Morton as Urania Blackwell, Bibi Newirth as the Siamese Cat, Andy Serkis as Matthew the Raven, and Michael Sheen as Lucifer. Featuring, in alphabetical order, Tom Alexander as the announcer, the reporter, Dr. Huntoon, Ken, Joe Bob, the Hippogriff, and the Undead Crow. Saga Arya as the Connoisseur. Ewan Bailey as Crispin and Peter Quince. Karen Bartke as Ethel Cripps and Goldie. Samantha Bayar as Calliope. Judy Talbot, the Serving Maid, the Weaver Bird, and Zelda's mother. Mitch Benn as Funland. Philippe Beauchere as Demetrius, the Tailor, and Punk Number 2. Laurence Bouvard as Barbie. Kate Fletcher, Aurelie, the Dreamer, Granny Goodness, Nan Fowler, Franklin, the Siamese Owner, and Della. Cliff Chapman as Garrison. Stephen Critchlow as Roderick Burgess, the Archery Captain, and Adonai. Ben Deary as Condell. Sandra Dickinson as the Hecate Maiden and Betty Munro. Felicity Dungan as Titania and the Barmaid. Oris Erhuero as Ruthven Sykes, Daniel Bustamante, and Waterboy. Danica Fairman as Rosemary, the Dreamer, and the Baby's Mother. Rachel Fowler as Miranda Walker. Don Gile as the Young Man, the Alderman, William Kemp, and Bottom. James Good as Dr. Jonathan Crane, the Scarecrow. Shay Grayson as Rose Walker. Laura Lefko as Hippolyta Hall. Toby Longworth as Gary Fletcher, Holdaway, Kit Marlowe, the Good Doctor, the Editor, Erasmus Fry, and Oberon. Sandra May Lux as Rachel and Eve. John McMillan as the African Morpheus. Teo Maggs as the Arkham Gate Guard, Chaucer, the Bouncer, Flute, and Ra. Joseph Marcel as the African Grandfather. Alan Marriott as Nimrod. John McRae as Hal and Dolly. Jessica Martin as Judy Garland. John Mariottis as Jed's stepfather, Barnaby. Harry Myers as Paul McGuire, the security guard, Old Harry, the proprietor, Glob, the bouncer, Moon River, the Wyvern, and Triangle. Kim Newman as himself. Amaka Okafor as Nada. Sarah Pittard as the little girl and little one. Ray Porter as Gilbert, Martin Tenbones, Wesley Dodds, Hector Hall, Beelzebub, the security guard, Richard Burbage, the Griffin, Mark, and Mulligan. Blake Ritson as Alex Burgess. Mac Keith Roach as Jed Walker and the Third Kid. Michael Roberts as Kane, the crooner, Snout, the TV newsreader, the elderly man, the barman, and the waiter. Kerry Shale as Abel, Brute, Security Guard 2, The Creeper, Leigh, Etrigan, Azazel, Scott Free, Marsh, Harold Smith, Monk, and Puck. Andrew James Spooner as Chaz, Harvey, and the Rebel Human. Ellen Thomas as the Hecate Mother. Inell Tomlinson as the King of the Birds. Kathy Tyson as the Hecate Crone and the Storyteller. Simon Vance as Lucian. Daniel Wayman as Rick Maddock. Tracy Wiles as Ellie's mother, the child Scott, Lushing Lou, Grass Widow, Esme, the stewardess, Young Unity, and the operator. Julia Winwood as Jed's stepmother, Clarice, Dog Soup, and the skewered head. Adam Thomas Wright as young Alex Burgess, Punk One, Dougie, and Nash. Lizzie Waterworth Santo as the second kid and Hamnet. Principal Recording Engineer, Rowan Henriette. Location recording engineers, Jonathan Williams in London, Dante Hodge in Atlanta, Georgia, and Rodrigo Galvan in New York City. Dialogue editor, Samuel Gunn. Sound designer, Dirk Maggs. Broadcast assistant, Abigail McLaughlin. Casting and production led by Marielle Runniker Temple, Nicola Wall, and Rachel Naughton. Casting assistants Alex Curran and Alice Hewer. Runner, Teresa Miluski. Production coordinator, Nicolette Chin. Production executive, Haley Nathan. Director of Audible Studios, Rachel Naughton. Commissioning editor, Steve Carsey. The original music is composed by James Hannigan. The creative director for The Sandman is Neil Gaiman. The Sandman is directed and dramatized for audio by Dirk Maggs. The co-executive producers are Neil Gaiman and Dirk Maggs. The sound recording is copyright 2020 by DC and Audible Originals. The Sandman and all related characters are copyrights and trademarks of DC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.